Welcome to What the Paper Said, in which I, Patrick Crozier, skim through the Times from 100 years ago, read some of the articles, and comment on the ones I find interesting. You are probably wondering why I haven't published any episodes recently. There is a simple reason for that. I've been ill. Probably COVID, but rather than the usual symptoms, it manifested itself as fatigue. Anyway, although I've been keeping up with my reading, there is no chance I'm going to be able to produce episodes for the missing weeks to the usual standard. So what I'm going to do is to combine all the big stories and some of the small ones into one big catch-up episode for the period ending 18th of March 1923. The big story at the moment, and indeed what's going to be the big story for the whole of 1923 is, of course, the French occupation of the Ruhr. There's not a lot to say about this, actually. It's you know, the same old stuff. We have expulsions, we have sabotage, a couple of French soldiers were murdered, possibly in reprisal, possibly for other reasons. 10 or so German civilians were killed by French forces, and with the result that very little has been resolved. In Britain, this is more of an Irish issue, they've rounded up about 1,000 Irish undesirables, people they believe to be involved in the anti-government side, the irregular side in the Irish Civil War, and have deported them to Ireland. This is hugely controversial, as you can imagine, but that's what's going on. The government has suffered a number of by-election defeats. I can't remember if it's 3 or 4. Now, one of them is a chap called Arthur Griffith Boscawen. Now, he was the Minister of Health under the Bonar Law government before the election. This is the December? I think it's the December election. And he lost his seat. And he has now fought a by-election to regain his seat and therefore to be able to retain his position, and he's lost it. He's lost it to a chap called James Tudor Ede, who some people may know was the Home Secretary under the Labour government in the late 1940s. If you're wondering why we no longer have university constituencies and you can't use firearms to defend yourself, well, he's your man. The replacement Minister of Health is a chap you may have heard of, one Neville Chamberlain. One of the big controversies at the moment is over socialist Sunday schools, which is odd. You know, obviously parents are sending their children rather than to learn about God, about to learn. To learn about socialism. Anyway, there's a lot of complaining about that, and some MPs getting ruffled and trying to ban it. On the railways, it's report season, and a lot of railways doing really rather well. It seems, which is very odd considering how high unemployment is and how uncertain the general situation is, that's a general economic situation is, but they are, including, by the way, the, what's it called, the Underground Railways, but they have a special title, UERL, which stands for, I think, United Electric Railways of London. Not doing so well is the Indian government, which has a large deficit. Now, I'd be curious to know if this is the statement that it's been very difficult for them to get their finances under control after the First World War, or it's more a statement that colonialism itself is not paying the bills. I believe one of the big drivers for the end of the British Empire was the fact that all these colonies were just a drain on finances. So, interesting to know. There have been calls for the Liberal Party to reunify. If you don't remember, it was unified up until the moment that Lloyd George took over from Herbert Asquith as Prime Minister in 1916. Then the Asquithian Liberals sat separately in the House of Commons, fought elections separately in 1918. They didn't do very well in 1918. And, well, now there are calls for reunification. It's difficult to see how that's going to happen when you consider that there are two huge personalities, Lloyd George and Asquith. And it's also slightly, what's the word? Pathetic or bathetic, considering that you could call this two bald men fighting over a comb, given that the Liberal Party is going to become very small very soon. There's a piece of legislation going through Parliament at the moment to increase the age at which you can buy beer or buy alcohol of any description, and that age is going to be increased from, I think it's 14 to 18. And it's been, pioneered. There's another word, I can't remember what it is. Anyway, it's been pioneered by Nancy Astor, the first woman to take a seat in the House of Commons. Now, no jokes about women MPs, please, no jokes. But certainly, I can remember, and I'm sure any Britain can remember what a pain it was when you were sort of 15, 16, wanting to buy beer, wanting to go down the pub and not be able to, and the whole issue of, you know, well, of course, a lot of us went in as, you know, underage and managed to get served, and sometimes you did and sometimes you didn't, and sometimes the police arrived. Anyway, all Nancy Astor's fault. In Russia... Sorry, the Soviet Union. They're beginning to admit that Lenin is not a well man by this stage. I think he's had two or three strokes and can't talk, although he's got another year or so to live. Marie Stopes, she of the birth, I think it's the Birth Control and Racial Progress Society. We know her mostly nowadays for the birth control side rather than the racial progress side. Anyway, she was in court. She was prosecuting a libel case. Someone she think libeled her. Most accounts says she lost the case. I would say she didn't entirely. Out of the three or four counts or decisions that the jury were asked to make, I think she won one of them. Anyway, and... there's a chap has been taking firearms or modifying firearms to turn them into bombs and sending them to people. They found out who it was, and it turned out he was a jilted lover. In other news, there's a prosecution. It must have been completed. It was several weeks ago. It involved an employee being found to be working on a Thursday afternoon. I'm amazed to hear that was an offence in Britain in 1921, but apparently it was, and employers are saying, well, we didn't know he was working, he must be enthusiastic. Also, there was a story about a Spanish soldier being eaten by wolves, and of a man managed to kill himself while crawling through a hedge with a loaded shotgun. Now, that may sound... very mundane, but those of you who are familiar with Parade's End, the novel by Ford Madox Ford, will be aware that, or perhaps more the Tom Stoppard adaptation from a few years ago, but you'll be aware that a character in that dies in exactly this way. And, well, you look at when Parade's End, it was... published. I think it was published in parts because there are four parts to it. It would appear to me that, well, this is where Ford, Madox Ford, gets the general idea. I'm going to end with Winston Churchill, which seems appropriate. As I mentioned in the last episode, the Times has been publishing extracts from his book covering his time in the First World War. This was later published as The World Crisis, but it hasn't got a name as yet. And it's, well, it's sort of interesting and sort of not interesting, actually. The background is that at the outbreak of the First World War, Winston Churchill was the First Lord of the Admiralty. If you're unfamiliar with that title, it means he was the political head of the Royal Navy, of the British Navy. And, well, to cut a long story short, the Navy did not do very well at the outbreak of war. It chased a couple of German ships in the Mediterranean and lost them. It had a battleship sunk off the coast of Ulster. It had three cruisers sunk by a submarine in the North Sea with a large loss of life. It had another, I think it's three cruisers or something, sunk off the coast of Chile. So it wasn't a great start. Also, at the height of this, Churchill himself thought it'd be a good idea to get himself off to Antwerp and see if he could make himself useful there. Well, first of all, by doing so, he made himself put himself out of communication. And when he got there with a whole bunch of Royal Marines, it turned out there wasn't much he could do. So he had to leave. So anyway, Churchill has been trying to justify himself. And this has been met with, how shall we say, a certain degree of pushback. A lot of people are saying that the Antwerp business was stupid. A lot of people saying he was responsible for the three cruisers getting sunk in the North Sea. And others complaining that he is using secret government documents which no one else has access to. Well, that's the sort of thing you can get away with if you're someone like Churchill. About the only thing I can say this is positive for him is he did back aeroplanes over airships before the war. I mean, even now, as we in 1923, it's not clear whether aeroplanes or airships are going to be the aircraft of the future. So the fact he was getting it right in 1911 is actually, I think, a feather in his cap. Anyway, that's all for this week. I hope to have something up next week, but I promise nothing.